This is Max Miller speaking from Los Angeles. The date is September 14, 1957, and before this microphone we have Robert C. Gardner, a Francisco lecturer of note on the flying saucer Enigma. Mr. Gardner, as the first question in this interview, I wonder if you would care to tell us just what you think flying saucers are.
Well, I think the flying saucers is a catch-all term to cover all of the unidentified flying object phenomena, or UFO, as it's been recently referred to. And being a catch-all term, flying saucers covers a rather complex situation. That is to say, many people think of flying saucers in the sense of always thinking of a disc-shaped or round-shaped aircraft. However, this is only one of many different types of airfoils or designs that have been observed in the sky by rather credible observers. So I think it's very important to emphasize the fact that flying saucers is a catch-all term to cover many different types of objects seen flying in our skies and having been seen by some rather expert and credible observers.
Do you feel qualified to research into these phenomena?
Well, yes, on two or three counts. One, I am a graduate of an Air Force school. I was trained in aircraft identification and construction, and I was in the Air Force in the last war. On the second point, I feel that I was or am somewhat qualified on the basis at least of an intense interest. I first read Major Keogh's book back in his first book called Flying Saucers Are Real back in the latter part of 1949. Mm-hmm. I did make at least one good sighting on my own, and these things re-stimulated my interest, and I think a genuine enthusiasm and interest helps a person to be qualified, because if you're sincerely and intensely interested in a subject, I think you're doing the best that you can on the level of your training to search out the facts of the matter.
Yes. Well, how extensively, might I ask, have you investigated these objects?
I have tried to track down what I consider to be credible reports. However, it sometimes turns out that these things are mistaken identifications of one kind or another, but I have traveled throughout the United States and Europe, interviewed officials, Air Force and airline pilots, both in the United States and Europe, have corresponded widely on the subject, and I feel that it's about as extensive and intensive as just one person doing a private investigation could do.
Now, you mentioned that you had sighted a flying saucer yourself several years ago. Would you care to describe it at all?
We were on a picnic one afternoon south of San Francisco on a place called Skyline Boulevard.
That's you and your wife?
No, there were six of us on a picnic. There were three couples.
Yes.
And it was about 4:30 in the afternoon. The sun was at our back, and there were two of these objects came out of the north, flying in a southerly direction. And since the sun was at our back and we were looking toward the east, we were not blinded, and we had excellent observation conditions. The weather was clear, and one of them kept right on going in a south-southeast direction and was soon out of sight, and the other one hovered, I would say, a matter of a few thousand feet from us at the most. That is, at the greatest distance, it was not more than a few thousand feet away.
Yes.
And hovered for a few seconds, and then in a tremendous burst of speed, it was gone out of sight in a few seconds to the south.
That must have been quite interesting.
Yes, it was a rather surprising thing to me, because one of the girls in the party said, "Oh, there go a couple of flying saucers." And I thought, "Who's trying to kid who?" And she said, "No, look up there." So I did think that he was serious at that point. And sure enough, I had my first, and I would say probably my only real good sighting.
Yes. Did they look metallic, physical objects?
They looked physical, but they didn't. Well, they weren't necessarily metallic. They had a definite outline.
Yes.
Rather hard to be certain whether they were metallic or not.
Mm-hmm. Was there anything in the local newspapers, or did you look about this sighting?
Yes, and I called the Oakland Air Filter Center, and they said that they'd had a few other reports about that same time.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I got more or less the confirmation that, to that extent.
I wonder if this sighting intensified your interest in the subject of UFOs.
Well, yes, it certainly re-stimulated it, although I had been interested. You see, that was in August of 1952, that is my sighting. Mm-hmm. And I had been interested since 49.
Yes.
But it certainly stimulated more activities,
I can imagine. In your research, you must have studied some of the Air Force reports on these phenomena. Now, I wonder if you can tell us if you believe the Air Force is hiding facts from the public, if their reports are contradictory to you, as so many other researchers and officers seem to feel, and if so, you might indicate why you think these reports are so contradictory.
I, in the first place, definitely do believe that they are hiding at least some of the facts. I think part of the contradictory reports are due to the fact that the PIO officer, that is the public information officer, at any definite or particular area have not checked out their release with the Pentagon in Washington.
Yes.
And therefore the Pentagon will issue a statement later on, upon further investigation and study, et cetera, we find that such and such is the case, and they usually play down the thing quite considerably.
Yes, I see. Do you know if there are any definite orders instigated by the Air Force to prohibit the Air Force pilots, airline pilots, and general military personnel from revealing any sightings they may make to the press or public?
Well, yes. Aren't there some official statements on that? You probably could give them a more verbatim word as to what those restrictions are. I know there are such.
Well, I'm particularly thinking of AFR or Air Force Regulation 200-2. I would take it that your opinion might be in accord with mine, that this regulation is probably an extreme and has been instigated to withhold certain facts. I think it should be rescinded, and might I ask if you concur likewise?
Yes, I certainly feel that naturally being eager to get more information, it should be rescinded.
I wonder if you might care to opine as to just why the government is keeping these data secret.
Oh, I think there is a combination of reasons. For instance, I was in the Pentagon in Washington, and I was interviewed, if you want to call it that, by several officers there in Air Force Intelligence. I was impressed by the fact that even though they were all wearing the same uniform, they did not all think alike.
Yes.
And I felt definitely that some felt that the information should be more generally released. However, they were under orders as to what to say.
Mm-hmm.
A general approach, namely, that the flying saucers did not exist.
Yes.
They spent several hours trying to convince me that flying saucers didn't exist.
Did they?
They did that. And my reaction was, gentlemen, there is too much protestation here. If they don't exist, so what? They don't exist. But why go to all this trouble to try to convince me they don't exist?
An excellent point.
But one interesting thing was that at the end of this several hours of trying to convince me of this, one of the officers spoke up and said, well, Mr. Gardner, one of the reasons we have an Air Force is to defend freedom of speech.
Amen to that. And while you were at the Pentagon, I wonder if you attempted to see any of the Air Force's official files of their investigation of UFO phenomena.
Yes, I did attempt to do that, but CHOP was the famous PIO man at the time.
Is this Albert M. Chow?
Yeah, that's right. Funny thing, I had known about Al Chow and been a casual friend of his for many years before he was in this official position.
Yes.
In fact, his closest friend lived in our house for a number of years.
Is that right?
Which gave me sort of an inside track there. And I said, come on, Al, don't kid me after all. I mean, we're friends here.
Yes.
But, of course, he had an official job to perform there, namely to deny the existence of these things. And so anything that I was given at that time, I was quite impressed with the fact that it was nothing new.
Mm-hmm.
And I was also impressed with the fact that they had a lot of information. And Mr. Chop may have been very innocent at the time. He may not have known that this other information existed. Therefore, he was being sincere and convincing because he didn't know any different.
Yes. Well, I think that Al Chop is more recently, at least subsequent to his retirement from the Air Force, that he has stated that flying saucers are in all probability interplanetary, more or less confirming your own species along this line to a certain degree, anyway. I wonder if you can tell me if you believe the Air Force, or whether or not you believe the Air Force will ultimately reveal
its files and findings on these phenomena.
Well, now, I have stuck my neck out a little bit in the past. The first magazine article I wrote on the subject, which appeared in 1953, I stated that I thought that the Air Force would, from the information I had at that time. But being subsequently disappointed in more than one occasion, I am now of the opinion that since they kept the atomic bomb a secret until they were very much ready to release the information, I think the same thing will be done with the saucer situation, and I think it will be quite some time. I really believe that they will not release anything until they're forced to by something that possibly occurs, because I think that as far as the interplanetary saucers go, there are many things that they do not know about the situation themselves. For an example, those in the higher echelons who are in the know hear about a certain UFO report where jets are vectored to pursue.
Yes.
Now, the men in the know, of course, realize the possibility that there are many things that we don't know about these things, and it could be, at least in some cases, rather dangerous. And it could, as General Chidlaw told me in a long interview at Ed Air Force Base when he was Continental Defense Commander, he said that that we have lost many officers, pilots, and planes, in, as he put it, trying to intercept the UFO.
That's amazing.
That's quite a statement, and I did not reveal this publicly until after his retirement.
Yes.
Even at the time, he did not say that I couldn't repeat it, but I respected his position until after he did retire.
Would you care to tell me approximately when this interview took place?
Yes, it took place in March of 1953.
Mm-hmm. Yes, well, that's unusually interesting. Was that Ned Air Force Base?
Ent Air Force Base. ENT at Colorado Springs.
I see. And to progress to a more controversial facet of this research, I wonder if you would care to tell us what you think of the many little men stories, the crashed saucer stories, especially those prevalent around Europe and South America in 1953, or rather in 1954 and 55. Also those expounded by Frank Scully in his book, Behind the Flying Saucers.
Well, to answer the last part of the question first, I would say that Frank Scully in the first place is a swell fellow, and did the very best that he could at the time in which he wrote his book, The Behind the Flying Saucers. You know, J.P. Kahn, a reporter of the San Francisco Chronicle, told me in a private interview that here Frank Scully wrote the book called Behind the Flying Saucers. He was going to try to write an expose and call it Behind Frank Scully. Now, I think that a character assassination attempt was made there. I don't think it was completely successful at all. He certainly did not assassinate a lot of the facts that Frank Scully had amassed there. I think it was a question of possibly getting a little misinformation mixed up with some real good information.
I see.
And then they tried to discredit the whole thing.
Yes. Well, along this general line of landings and little men and whatnot, what do you think of these many contact stories that have arisen in the past, though, 3 or 4 years?
Well, I think that possibly they seem to be so persistent, and the people seem to be so sincere. I am forced to believe that some of them must have some basis in truth.
Yes.
As just to which ones and how extensive or how much these stories were elaborated on.
Mm-hmm.
You know how it is. When we have an experience, we might get a little over-enthusiastic, and as the story goes on, it gets better and better. As to what actually originally happened, I don't know. I do feel that there have been some genuine contacts, however.
Well, that's the most objective comment, I feel. And switching to a more objective side of flying saucers as well, are your opinions generally in accord with those of Major Donald E. Kehoe's as expressed in his many talks and in his last 3 books on the flying saucer topic?
Well, I will say this. As far as he goes, I would say that my opinions are very much in accord with Donald Kehoe. I talked with him several times when I was in Washington. He lives in Arlington, Virginia, and we met together a few times and had some chats, and I think he's done an excellent job. I think his books are as well documented as any that I know, and certainly would be a credible addition to any library on the subject.
Yes, I see. Well, you recommend them fairly highly then.
I would say so.
Major Kehoe, of course, believes that flying saucers have an origin outside of this planet, that is, extraterrestrially. There is a research chemist in White Plains, New York, who has gone into this phenomenon, he says, for several years, and he has come to the conclusion that they are manufactured right here on Earth, that is, by the United States or Russia. I think he says the United States. Now, do you concur with this latter theory?
Yes, I firmly believe this, and I think if given enough time and an impartial group of people, I could actually prove it. In fact, I have a serial number of one of our craft that crashed in Trinity Bay near Baytown, Texas.
Yes.
I have the information that was taken off of that flying saucer. Besides that, I have other information which I think is overwhelming.
Sure.
At that particular time, we had our saucer aircraft, among others. There were two that were referred to as the Lark and the Loon.
Oh.
And then, of course, at the end of the war, the Russians, unfortunately, I say unfortunately because I think we should have taken over the German rocket base at Peenemünde. Nevertheless, they not only took over the rockets there, but they also took over a circular disc-shaped aircraft with which the Germans had almost gotten into the air,
mm-hmm.
which they designated as model number A4. This craft was rather remarkable. It would fly a minimum of 1,500 miles an hour and could rise vertically into the air.
Yes.
The Russians took off from that point and developed their own flying saucer.
I see.
So I think the mass sightings that have been made by the Swedish and Norwegian airline and Air Force pilots from Russian-occupied territory and Russian territory itself are largely of Russian origin.
But you feel, then, that both major world powers, the United States and Russia, have developed these type of aircraft?
And the British, too.
And the British,
yes. Both the United States Air Force and Navy Air Force, the British Air Force and the Russian Air Force, all have rather relatively advanced disc-shaped flying aircraft, both piloted and remotely controlled.
Virtually all researchers into these phenomena believe that reports of flying saucers or UFOs have been reported from all countries of this planet, at least all free countries. With this in mind, do you believe that any world power would be willing to exhibit a fallible, and of course anything Earth-made would be fallible, such a fallible secret weapon, such a top-secret device before alien eyes? Because there is always the possibility that such a device could be either captured or it could, on its own, crash, be destroyed, or in some fashion or other divulge the secret, at least the mode of operation or mode of propulsion, as the case may be.
I think they would be willing to gamble that, yes. I do feel that they would be willing to gamble it because the stakes are pretty high. And as a matter of fact, perhaps you have heard of that one that was supposed to have crashed, the Russian saucer that was supposed to have crashed north of Spitsbergen in Norway, and they claimed that they found the Russian symbols on the control panels.
Yes, as a matter of fact, I have, although the last data I read on that was in Bob Gribble's APRG Reporter, and this was, I think 4 or 5 months ago, and he quoted an article, and I believe it was from a Norwegian newspaper. Of course, it would naturally be about the most authoritative. However, I have tried to have the data confirmed, and this has not been done. It is difficult to say why. This report may have been a hoax or it may not have been. Nevertheless, this story or incident in this newspaper indicated, perhaps it was the magazine, that the saucer or UFO did crash and was found and was examined by Norwegian and other countries' Air Force officers. However, it contradicted the earlier statement that Russian symbols, etc., had been found. And it gave every connotation that this object or artifact was non-terrestrial. That is, there, perhaps some symbols, etc., found in it or on it were undecipherable, or perhaps some metallic substance could not be analyzed or was found to be unavailable on this planet. I don't remember right now. However, I don't think this could be validly used to argue the case in either way, because it is unconfirmed, as I said previously.
Sometimes these things are a little bit difficult to be positively certain of. We can only say that there are indications along that line.
Yes. I would take it then that you do not believe that flying saucers are interplanetary. Is this correct?
Oh, that's not correct. No, this is not correct, Max. The situation is that I feel we have two major sources, terrestrial and extraterrestrial. Oh. Then both of those sources break down into two subcategories.
Yes.
The terrestrial origins, one, are the ones that I mentioned, the United States Air Force, Navy Air Force, British Air Force, and Russian Air Force. And then certain flying objects from very little known and remote hidden areas, land areas where the white man has seldom set foot.
Yes.
This is a little mentioned source, but I think a very important source of this phenomena.
Mm-hmm.
Then the extraterrestrial phenomena break down into two major categories, namely the very solid third-dimensional origin, and then the more nebulous or fourth-dimensional, or what the Air Force chooses to call the out-of-phase aspects of physical reality.
I see. But you would, I would take it then, from what you've said, that you believe that the sighting reports coming from various parts of the world have predominantly stemmed from these terrestrially created aircraft.
I think that, put it this way, that a major portion of the disc-shaped aircraft seen have been of a very earthly origin.
Yes.
But then there seems to be a certain line that we can draw and say, well, beyond that, certain types of aircraft definitely have the flavor of the interplanetary class.
I see.
Mm-hmm.
Well, rolling along here with reference to the non-terrestrial objects or flying saucers or UFOs, do you believe that these particular craft have a hostile or friendly intent to their motives?
Well, no. In most all of the cases that I've ever been able to check down thoroughly, by first checking the reputation of the people making the reports and then investigating the reports and analyzing what they have reported.
Yes.
I feel that in most all of these cases, the UFO, that is the unidentified flying object or the flying saucer, has attempted to take an evasive action and get away from any conflict or attack or anything that would be classified as offensive.
Yes.
I think this is almost invariably true. So generally speaking, I could say that they certainly show a friendly intent.
Mm-hmm.
But besides that point, there have been cases of where our craft have been, well, I feel maybe we could go as strong as to say actually shot down or disabled.
Oh, really?
Where they've had to defend themselves in order to get away or something.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Would you care to give an opinion as to where these objects may originate from, that is, any particular planet or outside of the solar system?
Well, since we have such, as I had mentioned in the earlier part of our discussion here, that we have such a variety of shapes and sizes,
yes.
I think it's logical to assume, even though we have a lot of variety of shapes and sizes of our own aircraft on the planet Earth, I do think that the variety in shapes and sizes and the fact that these things have been seen for many, many decades indicate that they could be coming both from our solar system and from outside our solar system.
Yes, from, say, both Mars and a distant star system.
That's right. I feel that that's distinctly possible.
Mm-hmm. Well, I noticed that you said that these reports, as we all know, have come in a variety of shapes and sizes and colors and everything else. Disregarding that fact for a minute, do you believe that there are any segments of sightings, say, or along that line that could be classified into any pattern or patterns or colors, sizes, shapes, etc., outside of the general cigar or disc-shaped craft?
I think, as I had mentioned earlier in the discussion, too, I said that these take such a wide variety that I think it would be difficult to say that there were a pattern of any shapes and sizes or colors. It seems to be so varied.
Yes.
As Major General James Sanford, Chief of Air Force Intelligence, has put it, he said that there has been no pattern, as he worded it, I think, no pattern of any threat to the United States.
No pattern of any threat.
Yes,
underlined.
I wonder if you would care to relate any particularly dramatic or conclusive UFO sighting that you have found in your researches.
Oh, I think it would be difficult to limit that to any one case. I think there have been some rather dramatic and certainly exciting and unusual reports. For an example, to give you an idea of a little drama and action at the same time,
yes.
Not too long ago, there were a flight of six Navy jet fighters over the general Hawaiian Island archipelago, that is the Hawaiian Island area, in a routine training flight there. The report comes from a Navy commander. I'll not mention his name.
Mm-hmm.
who knew some of the boys that were involved in this, he said that six flying saucers, perhaps maybe coincidentally, or perhaps not coincidentally, perhaps more significantly, six flying saucers came down out of the sky at a higher, from a higher elevation, and each one of the saucers picked out an individual Navy jet fighter, and they flew right on their wingtips.
Yes.
For quite a little distance.
Mm-hmm.
And after a short distance, they tilted, apparently deliberately tilted over sideways in their flying, so that their top, this bubble or dome-shaped top, was very easily visible, say at a distance of not more than 30 feet.
Yes.
Which is extremely close, of course. And the boys were able to land their planes after this experience, and that's just about all, because they said that the occupants of these craft were so frightening that they were almost beyond description.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I still say that it's possible that these were space suits or pressurized suits of some kind, which gave this grotesque appearance, because, you know, our own space and high-altitude flying suits are rather grotesque in appearance, and they may not have seen the real occupants of the saucers. They may have only seen what was covering them up.
Well, that's a dramatic UFO report, all right. And digressing here, I note that in a recent Trendex national survey, it indicated that approximately 25.3% of the public, at least those queried, indicated their belief that UFOs could, and could, of course, is emphasized here, that UFOs could originate from outside of this planet.
Was this Trendex report made?
It was made, let me see, as of this recording, it was made about 3 weeks ago, or sometime around the mid or late of August.
In several cities, was it?
It was released out of New York. Yes, it was made. It was a national survey. How extensive it was, I don't know. It was published in the Indianapolis Star.
Hmm.
I think about, let's see, as I recall, about 25% of the public said that they didn't know or didn't opine it whether or not they thought flying saucers were real or not, and about 51 or so percent indicated they thought UFOs were either non-existent, hallucinations, misidentifications of weather balloons, or some type of craft made right here in our planet, as you have earlier indicated. But I was wondering, from your lecture series around the country, particularly here on the West Coast, would you say that interest in flying saucers has been increasing or decreasing over the past 5 years, say?
Well, it's a strange thing. I frankly think that that the press services have not picked up reports as much as they used to, because I think they consider it old hat.
Yes.
In many cases. On the other hand, I think as far as the public goes, there is greater interest today than there ever has been before.
Mm-hmm.
And not only that, I think there are as many or more sightings today than ever before.
Yes.
I think they're just generally receiving less attention, probably.
Mm-hmm. Well, I imagine that's rather true, but particularly in regard with this earlier mentioned Trendex report. Going along here, do you believe that there are many frauds or crackpots in this field of research?
Well, now, that's an interesting question. I feel that most all of the people are sincere. I do feel that some people let their imagination and their enthusiasm carry them into a realm where, to other people, they might seem a crackpot.
Yeah.
If they had a little more control of their enthusiasm, perhaps, and their sincerity, might not give this appearance. But from an impartial standpoint, I suppose that you could say that there were certainly these type of individuals. However, I think even those individuals in most cases are sincere, but they're just a little carried away.
I wonder if you have interviewed any other noted personages or authorities in this or other fields besides General Benjamin Chidlaw and Major Donald Kehoe.
Well, I was a guest of Arthur Clarke, the president of the British Interplanetary Society, in his home in London.
Oh, really?
We had a long way into the night discussion. And you may know that within the last few weeks, his latest book has been out. And it's quite interesting. He has been rather objective in this whole subject.
And, of course, he's quite a prominent person, has had written many books on the subject. He's
a recognized
physicist.
Yes.
He would certainly be classified as an interesting personality that I've had a long talk with about the matter. Oh, there have been many national newscasters who have interviewed me on their news programs, and we've talked privately both before and after the broadcast. Other, you might say, lesser government officials, that is, majors and colonels in various branches of the Air Force, of course, having been in the Air Force myself, having lived on top of Air Technical Intelligence Command at Dayton, Ohio for 25 years,
yes.
I sometimes had a pipeline in there, which was a rather fortunate connection,
mm-hmm.
to say the least, so that that and other authors of various books and other lecturers, of course, have been, take for example, Gerald Hurd. Wrote the book, Is Another World Watching? And then subsequently had another sequel out to that, which was expanded a little more, added to bring it up to date.
Yes.
General along those lines, various people.
Mm-hmm. Well, I believe that you've probably made more radio and TV appearances and interviews, etc., than any other flying saucer personality that I know of. Have you any idea just how many of these appearances you have made?
Well, Max, I tried to keep track of it, and when it got over 100, I sort of lost count.
Mm-hmm.
I have been on coast-to-coast hookups several times, both on radio and television. And as you know, early last spring here in Los Angeles, I was on television and radio 21 times in 10 days.
Yes.
So that's a pretty fast pace. As a matter of fact, mixed in between lectures and showing my motion picture and so forth, it keeps you hustling.
Regressing for a moment back to the contact stories, you indicated at least partial and qualified belief in some of these accounts. I was wondering if you feel that we may eventually effect a worldwide or universal contact, in other words, a meeting of the worlds?
I believe that that this will come about. It's always hard when you go ahead in time. It's always hard to say when. Nobody can say when, really. There have been a lot of prophecies and forecasts and so forth, some accurate and some not so accurate. But I do believe that eventually we can look forward to more contact, which will be much more in the open than presently we have.
Yes. Do you feel this will be effected gradually?
I think it will be effected gradually. However, I think when it begins generally that it will accelerate more or less rapidly. In other words, it may be gradual for a period of years now, but I think definitely in our time, there will be a point reached where this thing will accelerate considerably in its importance and in actual contact.
Would you care to hazard a guess as to just why these UFOs are visiting this planet at this time?
Well, I think we covered the ground earlier in this discussion, since they could be from both the solar system and outside of the solar system. As far as them being here is concerned, I think it's pertinent to interplanetary varieties.
Yes.
I think they are looking us over from the standpoint of many interesting observations. One, quite apparent, of course, that we have detonated many hydrogen and atomic explosions, and we have toyed with cobalt and so forth, and we're getting into more unstable elements.
Yes.
I feel it's quite possible that many of these planetary observers could have gone through this stage of development many, many eons ago, or at least quite some time ago, and they're interested to see how we are handling the situation as we come on it.
Yes.
And then, no doubt, interested to see what we are doing with other things in our advance of so-called civilization.
Mm-hmm.
I think this is probably a prime a point of the reason of them being here. Other lesser reasons possibly could be to give us help to neutralize radiation fallout if they could do so. To be of service in one way or another without directly interfering with the affairs of the planet.
And what do you think is the mode of propulsion of these spacecraft?
Well, now that's quite an interesting question. It involves, to do it justice, quite some discussion. But to try to encapsulate this and bring it down and condense it, I think we can compare what we might assume would be interplanetary propulsion with what we've done ourselves.
Yes.
I personally feel and believe that we have gone through a stage of propeller-driven, round or disc-shaped aircraft or flying saucers,
mm-hmm.
through jet, through rocket, through atomic, and we are presently flying our latest aircraft on what I think will become to be known as electrogravitic drive, which many commonly refer to now as anti-grav or anti-gravity devices.
Yes, I see.
Therefore, I think we can compare and say that foreign sources, as is interplanetary sources, can be possibly utilizing one or a combination of these methods, and possibly using the methods of which we are totally ignorant of. For instance, we had on Earth electricity in Cleopatra's time, but nobody knew it.
Yes.
We also have anti-gravity devices now, which we have been struggling to master for years.
Mm-hmm.
And we've also had that with us for centuries, but we didn't know it.
Yes.
So I think, likewise, there may be elements of electricity of which we know nothing about now.
Yes.
And of gravitational interplanetary lines of force of which we know nothing about. And realms of the fourth dimension, since our five senses are strictly limited, which, since we have cutoffs in our hearing perception, at about 15,000 cycles, we have cutoffs in our visual perception at definite number of angstrom units, and yet we know we can go far beyond that physically,
yes.
but we can't see it.
Mm-hmm.
Therefore, I think we know very little about what the possibilities are. We can only compare the possible propulsion devices with what we've already accomplished here,
I see.
Which I think is strictly limited.
Yes. Totally digressing here, Bob. What are your current plans?
Currently, this is, of course, 14th of September, 1957. I am in a few days going directly up to Seattle and up into Vancouver, Canada, and then down to Portland and returning to San Francisco. I will come again back down to Los Angeles the first week in November. Then I will return to the San Francisco area for a series of lectures and appearances in the Bay Area, including Sacramento, Oakland and the general Bay Area.
Yes.
And then after the first of the year, I will put on a series in Los Angeles.
Mm-hmm.
And then later in the year, which comes into spring, we will go east.
I imagine quite a number of people listening to this interview might be interested in contacting you, so I wonder if you can tell us if you are available for lectures, and if so, where you may be contacted.
Well, yes, Max. I have spoken to various Air Force groups. Incidentally, they've called me in. Their commanding officers have called me in to speak to their officers, pilots, and men. I've spoken to Rotary clubs, Kiwanis clubs, and various clubs of that kind. And then Flying Saucer clubs, of course, been organized for study of this phenomena.
Yes.
And then, of course, my public lectures, where I show my motion pictures, my flying models, which I've gone into quite more extensively in recent months.
Mm-hmm.
I have several of them now. And then I have a few little gadgets to demonstrate anti-gravity drive or this electrogravitic drive, which we've been talking about.
Yes.
And I will be available for club groups or individual meetings or larger appearances in between these other appearances, because we don't book ourselves solid. We always allow extra open dates,
mm-hmm.
because I want to be able to discuss and carry on these researches with people who are in groups who are interested, by all means, and exchange
yes.
information.
Mm-hmm. And you have a motion picture and slides on flying saucers, too.
Yes,
you?
I have. Now, presently, I have over 100 colored slides. I have motion pictures, which have been gotten together and edited so that the motion pictures run about 30 minutes now. If I showed my slides all in one night, that would be a program in itself.
Yes.
And it lends itself to quite a variety of phases of the question.
Mm-hmm. And you didn't say where you might be contacted, did you?
Oh, yes. I my home address, where my mail is always forwarded to me, is 1817 Jackson Street. That's 1817 Jackson Street, San Francisco 9, California. San Francisco 9, California. And if someone would like to call me long distance, as they often do, I might as well give them the number if it would be any help. It's Prospect 5, Prospect 56805. Prospect 56805, and that is at my San Francisco address.
Mm-hmm. That concludes this interview, so thank you very much, Mr. Robert C. Gardner.